Good day, friends. Jonathan Daugherty here with another edition of the PSR Podcast. You know, we're a listener-supported outreach of Be Broken Ministries, and we exist to help individuals and families move from sexual brokenness to wholeness in Christ and equip others to do the same. In today's episode, we welcome back Lachelle Burkett. She's the Executive Director of Hope Redefined, a ministry for wives facing sexual betrayal trauma. Lachelle shares some updates about her work, including a new 44-week healing curriculum, and then we dive deep into the complexities of betrayal trauma, misplaced hope, and the journey toward true healing. Lachelle offers personal wisdom from her own story, emphasizing the importance of finding safety, authentic community, and hope in Christ, not just in a spouse's recovery. It's really an insightful and practical conversation for anyone seeking restoration after deep emotional wounds. To learn more about Lachelle and her ministry resources, visit hoperedefined.org. For additional resources, you can check out our website at bebroken.org, or also we're going to put links in the show notes that will help you take some next steps. And of course, friends, please rate and review the podcast after listening to help others find it. Now, let's dive into today's hopeful conversation with Lachelle. All right. So we have back with us Lachelle Burkett. Welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Excited to be here.
Yes. So, you know, we have had you on several times in the past, and you have a ministry that is to wives and women who are dealing with all various aspects of sexual betrayal. So before we get into our specific conversation today, I just wanted to ask if there's anything new going on in the ministry that you wanted to share with anybody, any new resources, anything going on with your podcast, just what's been happening that you would want to share with our listeners?
Oh, wow. Yes. It kind of seems like it's an always morphing experience being an executive director to this type of nonprofit, but in the last year, last year and a half, we have created a new curriculum called Abiding in Hope, and it's a 44-week group for women to participate in. It's a closed group. They get an opportunity to build really deep relationships and community with each other while also continuing to go through some of their healing milestones together and do life. It's been beautiful. I had so much prayer over it and so much hope. And then to be able to witness it and now see these groups of women, we just had one group that met up for a vacation together. Somebody rented an Airbnb and they came in from all over the place. And I was like, I want my invitation. Where is mine? But and it really, that's the heartbeat of our organization, is the desire to create community for women to heal. So that's been a pretty exciting. And then, yeah, Hope for Wives is the podcast that I get to participate in with several others. And I absolutely love being able to be present there. And we get a lot of great feedback, and a lot of people love sharing those podcast episodes for various reasons. So there's lots of movement over here, lots of shaking and stuff.
Yeah. And we will definitely, at the end of this podcast, give people a link to be able to know how to get in touch with all of your resources and everything. This conversation is definitely going to makes a very direct connection to even the name of your ministry, because we're going to talk about redefining hope for betrayed wives, especially around this idea of where the husband sort of becomes looked at as kind of like the savior. Like there's an idolatry to saying, maybe if he gets well, if he gets on track, then everything will be fine in my marriage, maybe to the detriment of her own healing from betrayal trauma. So before we get to that specific element of the conversation, can we maybe take a little bit of a higher view of, can you just define for us what is betrayal trauma, so that as we get into this conversation and talk about the healing aspect of that and how to redefine hope in that journey, first of all, what is it? What is betrayal trauma?
Yeah. So betrayal in and of itself is essentially experiencing something that was not expected. Right? We had an assumption that the relationship was going to go one way, or the value systems were shared in this relationship. And when we discover that that is not true, you experience betrayal. And, you know, we experience a lot of relational betrayal. You may experience betrayal in family of origin with parents, siblings, other family members. And then specifically what we work through is those that are happening in marriages and those relationships. The trauma on the backside of this is that we continue to advance in research and understanding that many women who experience betrayal have a traumatic experience. And what this looks like is them developing and producing all the symptoms that we see, even that mirror someone who has PTSD. So their body is responding to an event that was not planned. I mean, trauma in and of itself is also an event that is not planned for. It is a surprise event that creates a lot of chaos for yourself, your neurosystem, your neurological system, your brain, your emotions. There's lots of things that are playing into that. And so I know that wasn't a very scientific definition of betrayal trauma.
No, it's good. And I think it's important that you put it in the context of relationship, because there's a lot of other kinds of trauma that can be experienced.
Absolutely.
Right? And that betrayal piece, it seems like it's really rooted in the sense of there's a type of trust that has been broken. And I would argue that any time in any significant relationship, whether it's a family relationship or friendship or marriage, where trust has been broken, there's a continuum of trauma that has been experienced. You know, we sometimes talk about big T trauma and little T trauma, right? I think anytime trust is broken in a relationship, there's a type of trauma experience, because you had an expectation of, well, you were supposed to not lie to me. You were supposed to not hide things from me, right? And so there's a sense in which, ooh, that stings, that hurts. What does then, now here's my question, is because we're going to be talking about like women who would then start to put their hope in, let's say, their husband's recovery. Maybe even that looks like putting hope in their marriage surviving. First of all, my question is, why would a woman who has been betrayed by her husband turn around and put her hope in her husband? It seems almost, I don't mean to use this in a medical way, but it seems a little schizophrenic, right? Like, wait a second, you've betrayed the trust, and now I'm going to say, but I'm going to hope that you would fix all of this. What's going on there?
Well, I think that what's oftentimes going on there is there's maybe a twofold. One, there still is an element of not understanding, where does my safety come from? And so we live in relationships, especially our marital relationships, and that is our person. That is our safe place. And so I remember saying, I can go out and the whole world can beat me up, but I can come home and be with my spouse, and that is a safe place for me. So part of our brain is still saying this person is supposed to be the safe person. On the other side of it, a lot of times we have spouses who are making those types of promises. I'm not going to do this ever again. I can see how much this has hurt you, and I didn't realize that my pornography use was going to hurt you this way, and I'll never do it again. And so we're so desperate for that trust to be restored, we go for it. And we're like, yes, he's going to fix this. He broke it, he better fix it, right? We kind of run with that idea. The other thing I'll say is I've come to realize for myself that rebuilding trust in relationships was never taught to me. I didn't have a class in high school, college. Like, nobody's teaching you how to rebuild trust, right? I remember having friendships, and trust was broken in elementary, middle, high school. And so then what do you do when trust is broken? You just stop being friends with them.
Right.
Right. Or maybe you have familial relationships and trust is broken, and your solution to that is, I just avoid them. I will tolerate them to a certain extent, but I will avoid them. And so those are kind of, I think, the ways that broken trust in relationship is modeled in how do you handle it on the backside of that. And that doesn't work in a relationship that is a marital relationship and includes children and a future and joint, all the things that. And so this is part of what I think most of women are trying to do, is repair that trust and assume that they need to give him more. Like, I can give you my heart back really quick because you're going to go fix it.
Yeah. And I can see that definitely being a response for wives whose husbands say, I'm sorry, I'm going to, you know, I recognize that I've hurt you and I'm going to get into recovery and I'm going to do all these things. And I can see the temptation then to say, oh, good, you know, because there's just, I love the way you put it. Like, that's my safe person. And yeah. I think even the way that God's designed marriage, it's meant to be this deeply intimate. It truly is an exclusive, like no other kind of relationship that we're supposed to have, which is also, I think, why the pain of that yes. betrayal goes deeper than any other kind of betrayal that you can experience. But what is the better way? And I know we're starting to kind of narrow down the wife we're looking at, and we'll broaden it out in a second, but we're kind of narrowing it down to the wife who has a husband who says, I want to get on track. I want to make this work. First of all, talk about maybe where there is some goodness and maybe rightness in trying to hope for your husband's recovery, but where that is dangerous to put your hope in his mm-hmm. recovery for your own personal healing.
Yeah. I think that the goodness part, we'll start there, is, you know, I couldn't imagine in the early years of our story, like me realizing what was going on, him saying he was going to go to group and do these different things that he was trying to find resources to find healing. I can't imagine me sitting there being like, you're such a loser and you'll never do anything right. Like, there's nothing about that was going to heal that relationship. I very much, and I think a lot of young brides, I will speak to them specifically, understand the assignment of being someone who cheerleads, advocates, encourages, believes in their spouse, right? That we can do hard things because of who we are as a team. And so that's where I see a lot of women trying to put that encouragement out there and trusting him with the possibility of him finding a solution to my bleeding, really is what it is. Well, the way that I'll just use my own personal story to kind of describe this. So here I am, late 20s. We'd been married almost 2.5 years when our story came out. He confesses because the church is offering a men's group and says that he wants to go join the group. And I'm like, okay, first of all, I'm shocked. I didn't know there was a problem. But second of all, good for you. Look at you taking responsibility and going to group to get help. I truly thought in my heart of hearts that that was the last time I was ever going to talk about it with him. I thought he would go to group. I thought he would find some sort of fix and the temptation would go away. I did not understand the concept of addiction at all. And I think that's another piece to this for a lot of women is that they may not understand that it is a true addiction. They just think it might be a bad habit, right? And that thought process can be formulated by lots of things that we could go into, but that they've just assumed it's a bad habit and he doesn't want to do it. So he's not going to anymore.
Yeah.
Right. And so in going back into my own story, he starts going to this group and I start to put my hope in this group. And I'm pretty sure, I'm assuming that he's going to go to group and that group is going to talk to him about my experience, my heartache, my pain, and they're going to teach him how to come home and heal me.
Mm.
Right? Well, guess what? About 2.5 months in, the group is really dumb and everybody in that group is dumb. And he doesn't even know why he keeps going. So panic starts to set in for me because I'm not healed yet. What do you mean this group is dumb and you don't want to go anymore? Right? Then the book comes out. Well, I found the book. I'm like, look at me. I'm doing so good. I bring the book. Here's a book about healing from betrayal. He never reads the book. So I am starting to spiral. I do not know what to do. I'm not healing. I don't feel better. He doesn't really know what to do in his defense, right? He's oblivious, but he's also not doing the things that I think he should be doing in order to, mm-hmm. to fix this, right? So then we step into a pastor's office and we talk to them about the support. And the pastor offers to meet with him if he would like to do that. My husband decided he didn't want to meet with the pastor, so never followed through with it. Now I'm panicking. Now I'm mad at both my husband and my pastor because nobody's figuring out how to fix me. But I don't have that clarity. I can't say that I'm running around telling everybody to fix me. What I continue to say is fix the problem. Mm. Why are we not fixing the problem? Because the problem is what is impacting me, right? And so it's not me necessarily walking around thinking I have a problem. It's this thing, this behavior in our relationship is the problem. And so we got to get that under control so the relationship will find some stability and then I will start to feel better. But that isn't really the math that we're experiencing. And so we continue. And for me, I did it for many years. I remember he got an accountability partner. I was like, yes, that's the secret sauce right there. Accountability partner is going to tell him how he healed his wife and how he did all the right things and stayed away from this decision and choice. And that will in turn be translated and given to me. Right. And I remember even reaching out to one of his accountability partner's wives and being like, how did you do this? And she's like, well, he's just done a good job. But there was no real clarity around that. And so it left me feeling very empty and lost. Mm.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing all that. Now, as you're saying a lot of that, I'm thinking, you know, there's a lot of similarities. I don't want to get too far diverted by this, but there's a lot of similarities between where a wife may misplace her hope and where a husband who's trying to get into recovery can misplace his hope. Yeah. A lot of times he's looking at, well, that counselor is going to fix me. That group is going to fix me. That book is going to fix me. So I'm seeing a little bit of similarities into where we're trying to put hope into something that really can't deliver what we are hoping it would deliver. And obviously, even for the wife who's experienced that betrayal, we're talking even narrowly right now about her putting her hope in her husband's healing in order for her to get well. But aren't there a lot of other places that a betrayed wife could put her hope as in a misplaced way? I mean, absolutely. What are some other ways in which she could put hope into something that's not really going to deliver what she needs? And then we'll talk about, like, what is the target? Like, what is the aim that a woman who's experienced betrayal trauma needs to have so that she really can heal?
Yeah.
But what are some other misplaced hopes?
I would say that I've seen women misplace hope in themselves. If they can be more, be better, work out more, be less annoying, whatever, they're going to come up with some sort of agenda for themselves that they need to be.
Or be super spiritual and say, if I could just forgive him and say I trust him. Yes. And, you know, all those kinds of things, right?
Absolutely. Yes. So there's a lot of times you'll see the misplaced expectation or hope put in themselves that they will figure out how to fix this. And it obviously can be very destructive and they start to just drown under that pressure. I see other women who would I say it's hope? I don't know, but I see women who will choose avoidance. Well, that's his thing. And so I'm going to just stay over here on my side. And if I need to engage with that, great, but I'm going to begin to shut down myself because this is too vulnerable and I don't want to be hurt anymore. And so then suddenly she's in a state of avoidance, lack of emotions, empathy, compassion, and I think her hope is being put in that she can protect herself enough to not bleed anymore. Mm-hmm. Right. I've seen women who lose themselves in their parenting and they suddenly start to project things onto their kids. And so if my husband's going to be a hot mess, well, at least my kids can be perfect and I'm going to help them be perfect. And so they get really lost in that way. And I've also seen women, you know, I talk about the disconnection, but I've seen women who've struggled with substance use and other addictions, they would start to morph for themselves in a hope of getting away from the pain.
Yeah. I've even seen what we might call like retaliation affairs. Like I'm going to put my, I'm going to go put my hope in my boss or in my hope in this other person, you know? So obviously betrayal trauma, when we put those things together, there's a very real effect that it has. And I think one of the effects that it has on women really is that there's a lot of just chaos that's going on emotionally, mentally, and it's part of that trauma response. So what is, for lack of a better way to put it, maybe what is then the goal or the target that will really help a wife begin to heal from that betrayal trauma? If all these other things are misplaced hope, where can she start to find some of that security and that grounding and true hope for being able to heal and not not having to live with this false idea that she will never heal from this or it will never get any better for her?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I want to answer that question a little with a little diversion about like help continuing to help explain what the heck is going on with me, right? We're asking that question of ourselves as we start to feel these out of body experiences of, and the trauma is rampant and it's really happening. We're trying to minimize it. We're trying to ignore it. We do lots of different things with it. The very foundation of the way that we approach healing, and this is specifically from the APSATS model, the NPTM model, is the first stage we call is safety and stabilization. And so I just want to give women some language for themselves and understanding that oftentimes, most, if not 90, 95% of the time, the reason you're choosing to put your hope in something else is because you cannot find safety. If you could find safety, then you would feel like you were more stable, right? And so this is why we're doing that behavior. We're seeking safety. We're trying to do whatever we can to restore safety within our environment. And it's not always good. It's not always a good choice.
Yeah. You know, one of the things that comes to my mind is even the way that God has created our bodies. If you think about it, the way the body is most at rest or it's functioning properly is when there is an equilibrium. You know, you could almost make it a synonym of safety. In other words, the body is balanced. So when your brain is balanced, when your organs and the way all those systems are balanced, there's a sense of rest in your body, like you're functioning well. Well, obviously, when trauma kicks in, I mean, everything gets thrown out of balance. And first of all, I think it's important for all the wives that are listening to know that is actually a normal and right and good response of your body. It is a warning system saying something has, quote unquote, attacked you. Like there's a response that's telling you, find safety. You need to find equilibrium. You need to find, and so where then can a woman go to start to find that safety in a healthy way? Because obviously her husband, even if he's doing well in recovery, he's on his own journey of disequilibrium, right? I mean, so I just want to ask you, where then can she go to start to find some of that stabilizing safety and equilibrium for her mind, for her emotions, even for her will of like what she's going to do next?
Yeah. I think the way I'm going to answer this question, Jonathan, is through a personal journal time that I had done with the Lord, specifically around the story of the woman with the blood disease. And so this one morning I was reading it again. I've read it multiple times. And as I was reading the story, I felt a stirring in my spirit to look at the similarities that I as a betrayed wife had with this woman who had a blood disease. Because the truth was, is that she is navigating something that she never asked for. She did not want this blood disease. It was not a choice, right? And so much of my story was never a choice of mine. The other piece was, is that when you start to read into like her choices, her actions, the way she was trying to find healing for herself, she went to cities far and wide trying to find other people who could heal her. And she was coming up short. The other piece was, is that she was also carrying a ton of shame because in that culture, bleeding was so unclean. So there was lots of hiding and isolation. She felt so lonely. I can only imagine just trying to unpack this woman's story and her reality. And it was like, I got all of those things. I get it. And so as I was reading the story, I began to look at, I was just reading the scriptures and just trying to visualize that whole moment. And then just as I was writing some things down, I felt like the Lord dropped in my spirit, you know, Lachelle, you've been running after the wrong hymn for a really long time. And I sat with that for a moment. And what I realized is that for so long, I was reaching for the hem of my husband's garment. I was desperate for him to heal me somehow, some way. And the truth is that he was never named healer. He was given his own name, right? The only one who was ever named healer was the Lord. And so it was this invitation for me to consider, will I go and reach for the hymn that can actually heal me?
Mm.
And the other thing that was so beautiful was I continued to read that story, and the Lord asked me to pay attention to the way that he responded to her. Because the way he responded is he turned towards her. That's what it says. He turned towards her and then acknowledged her and said, "Daughter, your faith has healed you." Right. And so I just started unpacking that. I'm like, what in the world? Like, you saw her. You saw her. And then not only did you see her, but you said that her faith healed her. And so in the grand scheme of things, she could have stayed at her house and had faith in Jesus and be healed. But there was something so powerful about her being at the edge of his garment that needed to take place for her to experience that healing, that intimacy, and that realization that she had been running after it in a lot of places, and she finally found it.
Yeah. And you know what I also find beautiful about that story, beautiful and a little bit terrifying, is that Jesus did not allow her healing to remain in a private place. I mean, she was healed as soon as she touched his hem, but he wanted to call her up. I mean, he calls her daughter, right? So there's a sense in which he was letting the community around her know what had happened in her life so that she wouldn't have to take the next steps of her journey alone, right? Because sometimes, I mean, again, not to get too much of a sidebar, but I see some parallels sometimes in a wife's healing and in a husband's recovery, is we want to privatize that whole process, meaning like, listen, if I can just get in the closet with Jesus and go, "God, take this," you know, for a husband going, "Take this away from me," for a wife going, "God, heal me." And there are private, there's obviously a personal, deep personal connection that we are to have with Christ. But I think you've seen it in your own life and in the wives that you serve. We see it in the men that we work with, the real ongoing wellness that you are going to experience from that healing always occurs in community. Like authentic, genuine belonging, like you belong here. Come in, daughter, come in, son. You know, there's a sense in which we need that community around us. So can you talk a little bit about that? How a wife can get into the right kinds of community without making the community an idol or putting her hope in the community, but realizing the necessity of that for her healing of what she's found in the hem of Jesus' garment.
I love that you said without making the community an idol, right? Just switching one out for the other. Because that is a place of caution that I would encourage any woman to say, our stories are different. Our healing journeys will be different. You know why? Because God is creative and he knows you so intimately that he knows that my journey and your journey are not going to fit each other. He is so committed to being that present and intentional with each of us. So I always encourage women as we start groups or anything else, like, hey, you get permission to be right where you are. And so I would encourage listeners to find a community that allows them to be right where they are, that they don't have to be less or more, that they get to just walk where they're at that moment and know that that is still safe. So that way, if they show up as a hot mess, today they're a hot mess. And tomorrow they may be like joy-filled and painting rainbows. Who knows? But at that moment, they need to be able to be as authentic as possible. I think that's what holds us hostage, is the inability to be authentic. We continue to keep trying to show up and be comfortable for other people. And we need to be able to find that sacred space and community that we can be true and honest.
Yeah. And obviously that's one contextual element to a wife's healing. But I want to go back for just a second on really the story that you shared and how that journaling experience was for you was so powerful. But I'm thinking there's probably some wives out there that are going, "Lachelle, I'm hearing you ultimately say that the true hope that I'm going to have in my recovery is going to come in Jesus." But she might be asking, "But what does that look like practically?" It's like, maybe this is a wife who she's been in the church. Maybe she's been saved for a while, or maybe she understands a little bit of what that means, but maybe not know how to really apply that to the betrayal trauma that she's experienced. So can you try to help a wife make maybe a little bit more tangible connection to what that hope in Jesus looks like for her when she's a hot mess, when she's feeling like her whole world is spinning out of control? What might that look like in a more practical way?
Yeah, we get to talk about this and unpack this actually at our, we do a retreat twice a year for wives. And we do talk about those practicals, right? It's good to have the ideas, but what does this really look like? And at the retreat, I typically draw a triangle on our dry erase board and I put me, him, and God. You know, God's at the top of the triangle and he and I are at the bottom. And I walk them through my own story about how I was on his side of the triangle for so long because I was adamant and sure that I needed to be over there on his side, managing lots of things in an effort for him to find healing. Because again, the direct result of that healing would then be meaning that I heal. What I've come to understand is regardless of what my husband chooses to do, I get to heal. Because I am a daughter of the King. Jesus died on the cross for me as an individual. He did not die on the cross for my marriage. And, you know, we've talked a little bit about that, that marriage has become an idol in the Christian church, even in our Christian communities, that is the end all be all. And unfortunately, that's not true. It's not true. Right. It's just a symbol. And so what does it look like for me to go back to my side of this triangle and do relationship with the Lord? Also knowing that there is the bottom part of that triangle, which is relationship with my spouse. And how do I walk in understanding healthy boundaries and what should and shouldn't take place? So some of the tangible things that I tend to encourage women to consider is the first one is usually the hardest is consider grief. There is so much value in being able to sit with the Lord and tell the truth about your reality and the hurting and the brokenness. And he promises over and over again in his word that he will be close to us. In Psalm 34, it says that he is close to the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. And I remember one time realizing that I've never confessed that I'm brokenhearted. I could not. I struggled to say I was brokenhearted because being brokenhearted to me translated to weakness or vulnerability or a need. And I am a person who is going to live in self-sufficiency and have no needs. And P.S., I've also lived in an environment and world that my needs weren't necessarily met, right? Mm-hmm. And so what's the point of telling the Lord that I am broken when I don't assume that he's going to do anything with that anyway? But that's not what that scripture says. It says that he is close to the brokenhearted and binds up their wounds. So when you as a partner begin to sit with that concept of grief and understanding the brokenheartedness, telling the truth of your story to yourself and to the Lord, there is that moment. There's that comfort that comes with knowing he's going to bind up those wounds. So I love being able to walk women through pieces like that. I love helping them rebuild their relationship with the Lord. So many of us are trying to also try to dissect my husband from the Lord. Like they were kind of, some women talk about how they become one and the same, that I have to pass through my husband to get to Jesus. And that's not accurate. It's not true. And so being able to help them understand that they have access to the Father and that changes everything.
Yeah, that's so good. I mean, as we wrap up, we certainly can't cover everything that's needed to be covered here. But as we wrap up, I want you to think of the women who are listening that are going, oh my goodness, I have misplaced my hope in a lot of different directions. And maybe they're feeling discouraged, they're feeling weary, they're feeling lost in some ways. Just what encouragement would you give to the women who are realizing that maybe they need to redefine what hope looks like in their personal journey?
The very first thing I want to say to them is, me too. Me too. I've placed my hope in a lot of different places and it has come up very short. And over again, the Lord is so patient and so kind and so much mercy to continue to say, just come right back in here, Lachelle. I'm going to tuck you up under my wing and, you know, and we're going to try this again. So that's one of the things I'd say, me too. P.S. The Lord does redos. He's not tired of, you know, mercy's new every morning. And then the other thing I would say is, would be the encouragement of community is finding others that you can go in there and say, man, I've been running hard after a lot of things that have felt very fruitless and I need help either having permission just to sit in some of it and slow down and be allowed to look at it for a little bit longer than what we typically give ourselves permission for, or for them to just even lead you. I mean, I tell women in our community all the time, I am not complete. I'm not finished. I have not arrived. There is nothing about my story that says that was great. Good job. Way to go. Like, we're not done. We're always going to be in process. And so being able to sit in community where you start to become friends with the idea of being on the journey versus assuming that there's an end. Because I think it becomes a lifestyle of finding hope in the Lord.
And that's what beautiful, and what's beautiful about even being in process is that you're never always at the same point. And so sometimes people hear in process and think, oh my goodness, it's going to be for a lifetime. It's like, yeah, but you hit mile markers where you go, I'm not where I used to be. And maybe it's only a few inches, but then sometimes you hit miles, you know? So there's a sense in which the more you can get familiar with the journey, you can start to celebrate the fact that you're in movement. So as we wrap up, Lachelle, where can our listeners and viewers go to learn more about you and the resources that you offer for women that are dealing with betrayal trauma?
Yeah, you can find us. We have a website, hoperedefined.org. We're also on Facebook and Instagram. You can find Hope for Wives podcast on any podcast platform that puts it out there. And then, of course, we have a website, Hope for Wives, and it's F-O-R Wives. You can also see me. We've got some other speaking engagements and events coming up. So you can check our website. It'll have those things posted for different various conferences and other things that are happening. But we'd love to be able to walk with you. We do an intake call with every woman who reaches out to us for support, because we want to make sure that we're actually going to support them in a way that's going to be effective versus just assuming anything. So you can reach out for an intro call is what they're called. And we'd love to connect with you.
That's great. We'll be sure to post all that in the show notes, Lachelle. But thanks again. It's always, I always enjoy my conversations with you. So thanks for being on the program.
You too. Thanks, Jonathan. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, listeners and viewers, be sure to check out the show notes, because we're going to put all those links in there to help you take your next best step towards wholeness in Christ. And so we're always glad that you're with us, and we look forward to seeing you back here again next time on the Pure Sex Radio program. Take care.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.